next three readers is that their surnames sound like the coming of some sort of contemporary apocalypse. And I'll give them, I'll dole them out like cards. Our first reader, Zach. Is that right? Yeah, Zach Plague has a novel called Boring, 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 Boring. Out from Featherproof Books. Featherproof Books, you can find out all about them on that table there. And it says something here about his mustache. I'll let him tell you about his mustache. Zach Plague, everybody!
All right, I'm not going to say anything about the mustache. You can just watch it dance. The novel is called Boring, 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 Boring. Comes out in August. That's kind of all the context you need for this. The rumor had been going around for weeks. Paul was living in the small art museum downtown. Alistair believed this rumor. He liked to believe rumors. He checked his damp coat and scarf at the cloakroom and paid for his ticket. The clerk behind the counter felt like a ghost. There was no one else in the building. He tucked the politely informative brochure into his back pocket and proceeded into the near-empty galleries. He wandered lazily through American folk art and the Impressionists, because he knew if Paul were here, he could only be found in one place, antiquities. Paul had a penchant for things Mediterranean. He had spent 7 years there as a boy. His father had been trying to breed a new species of grape that would produce a wine so delicate that it would not register on the taste buds at all. Invisible, odorless. As crop after crop failed to produce the grape that would turn wine to water, he increasingly turned to lesser, more flavorful wines to drown his defeat. Meanwhile, Paul was busy drowning himself on weekends at various tourist beaches. He discovered that a floundering American boy too far out in the cresting waves would often be swept up in the bronzed arms of some curly-haired Poseidon masquerading as a lifeguard. His sexual predilections eternally written in those soft sands, Paul had a more difficult time when shipped back to the States to attend school, where sand and sun were no longer his co-conspirators in seduction. Alistair was a friend made in a classics class, from paganism to Christianity. The young instructor that taught the course was so passionate about his subject matter that he couldn't resist acting out entire scenes from the Iliad, complete with different lilting accents for each Greek or Trojan hero. He took advantage of his captive audience, none more captivative than a thin, tan boy, especially susceptible to the cult of the hero. Paul was completely smitten, and rather desirable himself, even without taking into account his seemingly endless supply of ecstasy. Despite perfunctory inquiries into the matter, Alistair could never quite figure out where it all came from, but much of it clearly went to the instructor. The affair was a predictably passionate one. They spoke Greek to one another, Latin during lovemaking. Trojan condoms, seemingly appropriate, were dismissed as unnecessary. The disease, after all, was love. They were both obsessed with fine art, and it was during this time that Paul made a brief splash on the local art scene. Alistair set it all up. He provided everything, the ideas, the materials, the money, the contacts, the gallery openings, the patrons. But the work itself was perfection. Had Alistair been bothered to lift a finger, he could have scarcely produced such quality. Giant marble busts, acrolith cult statues, wood bodies with marble hands and heads. The first opening featured the heads of most of Paul's punk rock friends, the arching mohawks down to the painstaking piercings mellowed by those empty statue eyes. They were widely regarded as actual works of art. They all sold, save for the bust of Alistair, which ended up in a dumpster under a stream of its muse's urine. His next show sold out as well, busts again, this time of famous socialite suicides, expressions captured at the moment of death. This led to a lucrative series of commissions. Hollister managed to secure a handsome cut of the profits. After those trickled out, Hollister didn't have much use for Paul. His beloved Greek instructor, studying late one night at the museum archives, accidentally impaled himself on a second century spear he was examining and, unable to move, bled to death. Paul disappeared completely after that. Hollister didn't exactly know why he cared, but the rumor had sparked his curiosity. He wanted to see for himself if Paul were still alive, and he might like some ecstasy if some were available. The antiquities section was completely silent. Hollister walked softly between the glass cases filled with ancient armor or earthenware. As he bent over to examine a particularly striking ivory inlaid comb, he felt a presence beside him. "Paul," Hollister tried to affect the tone of happy coincidence. "Hey, man, how have you been?" A slow, unnatural chuckle pulsed from Paul's unshaven lips. He turned and began to lope towards the sculpture section. Hollister, not knowing what else to do, followed. As they walked, he furtively glanced into the shadowy corners. Supposedly, Paul had found a way in between the walls, into the substructure of the museum. This allowed him to hide from the guards and sleep safely at night. Hollister didn't feel terribly serious about art theft, however, the potential here was in the millions. The ancient sculptures were kept in a large, airy gallery. Gray squares of skylight gave the room an underwater, slow-motion light. The togaed Greeks stood stock still, as though Mount Vesuvius had frozen them mid-frat party. "So I heard about Mitchell. I'm really sorry," Paul Hollister offered. "They're coming for you next," Paul whispered. He was caressing the stony face of a long-dead emperor. "Who?" The white sodality. "They got Mitchell. Now they want you." Paul, what do you mean? Mitchell was killed? You should get out of here. Get back to your art. You can come to my house." "I can't leave. Besides, you're next." Hollister spent the next 4 hours trying to get Paul to tell him more, begging, pleading, threatening, bargaining. But his old friend had assumed a motionless pose. His face, in line with the other busts, would not crack. The end.